My name's Hardik Dalal. I'm a senior manager at EY, but more importantly, we're all here for this exciting and different presentation to some of the other topics, I guess, at the seminar, called WorkSafe Factories, Traditional, Not Really. I don't think I've done justice to the punctuation marks there, but... So we have two speakers today, Nikki Appleton and Amanda Aitken. Let me just give you a short bio on them. So Nikki joined WorkSafe Victoria in 2010 in the actuarial division and then moved into the health operations division, where she's been there subsequently. The work Nikki's undertaken in the health operations division has been quite varied and more non-traditional than a general insurance actuary, and I guess that's part of the inspiration for the presentation today. And she's worked closely with the medical specialists and scheme agents. Previously, Nikki was a consultant at PwC for 13 years, working in more traditional valuation type roles. And Amanda joined the actuarial division in WorkSafe in 2002 and currently specialises in the scheme's medical performance after having worked in the health operations division for 12 months. Prior to WorkSafe, Amanda spent 4 years as a consultant at Tillinghast Towers Perrin. And one of the highlights of Amanda's time at WorkSafe was her involvement in the 2009 Ambassador Program, which included time spent in the UK and Sweden learning about some of the challenges and opportunities facing their schemes. Please welcome Nikki and Amanda, and Amanda's going to speak first.
Thanks, Hardik. An Apple iPad, an engagement ring from Tiffany's, New York, cookbooks with personal annotations, two tennis trophies won by betting the same guy in the same tournament, a set of guitars and a grand piano. These are some of the prized possessions of WorkSafe Actuaries. And I actually had that prepared before Sam Bailey got up and spoke yesterday morning, so now I'm regretting that introduction, but I did say that no family members or things related to family members are allowed to be included. That's my excuse. Some of us are employed in the organisation as actuaries, but some of us just happen to be actuaries in non-actuarial roles. And most of us are performing roles that are quite different to those that we've had in previous organisations throughout our careers. Nikki and I thought it would be interesting to have a look and explain what some of those roles are that we currently fulfil. And then we wanted to have a look at how we actually add value within those roles, using both traditional or more technical skills, but also non-traditional capabilities. And finally, we gave some thought as to how we might be able to encourage today's students and tomorrow's actuaries to become more than just pure technical actuaries. So I'll start with having a look at some of the things that we get up to day to day. For those of us within the valuation team, or within the actuarial team, I should say, one of our roles is to work with the business to explain the 6 monthly valuation results and help the business understand how they can actually impact on those results. So we try to translate actuarial concepts like PPACs and continuance rates and development periods, all that sort of dry, technical, boring stuff, into language that the business can understand and therefore keep in mind whenever they're making any sort of business decisions. We also work with the business to help them to understand the concept of long tail, which doesn't come naturally to most people. So one example of doing this, I'll steal from TAC and David Gifford, who plays a very similar role there. He set up a model for claims staff to help them understand that for every extra hour of attendant care per day that is approved, it's a $500,000 liability impact for the TAC. So by using that fairly simple model, claims staff can more readily keep in mind not just the social implications of the decisions that they're making, but also understanding what the financial implications are so that they can better make calls and balance those outcomes that we've talked about throughout the seminar. We also help the business to gain a level of comfort with the data and the analysis that we're presenting so that they feel able to challenge that data, which is a really important process. It's pretty hard when you've worked on putting that analysis together yourself and you've been really bogged right down in the detail of it to come back up and make sure that it makes sense. So I think that process helps the business to embrace the data because they've played a part in getting it to its final stage, and also helps us to be a bit more proactive. So often before we get to the valuation every 6 months, we've identified trends and experience that's happening within the scheme, and we've often acted on it before we get around to that valuation. We also do quite a few sort of more non-traditional areas of work. One of those, a lot of us have been involved in the agent remuneration model, which is a performance-based system we use for our insurance agents. We work to make sure that that model stays relevant for our insurers, but also that it continues to align the goals of WorkSafe and our agents. And most of us have been involved in facilitating change of some sort. For some of us, it's been quite significant change that we've helped to facilitate. So in the case of Peter McNally in our dispute management division, he helped to introduce a fixed cost model to help contain the legal costs within the scheme, which had been growing quite rapidly. So I'll now pass to Tien Chin, who's a member of our actuarial team at WorkSafe, to talk about what he gets up to day to day at WorkSafe.
My name is Tien Chin. I'm an actuary at WorkSafe. Just more recently, I've been involved in our return to work area. One of the things we look at is help identify segments of poor return to work performance. We help the business ask the right question. We interpret the data if the business are not able to. Our internal actuarial team work hard to explain the trends and help the business understand the numbers better. Being an internal consultant, you have access to a lot of people, so you end up showing the charts and things to different parts of the business and say, oh, can you help me understand this or that? Having access to lots of different parts of the business, that you end up developing a broader understanding of the business. Being in return to work, I sort of thought the actuarial bits were really important. It's only one of the things that's important to a scheme. It's not there's the financial management side, but there's also the bit that the injured worker is readily interested in, which is getting off benefits and getting back to work.
So Nikki and I next had a look at why an organisation like WorkSafe employs actuaries. And to do that, we spoke to our colleagues, both actuarial colleagues and also some of our non-actuarial workmates. And one thing that came through probably quite obviously is that just about everyone said one of our big strengths is that we know numbers and we're good with numbers, which is obviously a traditional area of strength for actuaries. But we also are able to think in lifetime costs, so that's instilled in us very early on within our education, and that makes us a natural fit for an injury scheme, which is obviously long tail by nature. We're also comfortable working with uncertainty. So in most of our schemes, we've got this huge amount of data available, and any analysis that we're asked to perform, as you know, there's a sort of no really right or wrong answer, so we're very comfortable in being able to hypothesise and scenario test to put a range around the sort of likely outcomes or answers. And we're also able to look at problems holistically. So we understand the link between the long-term nature of schemes, the liabilities of the scheme, premiums, and also the link between the various benefit types within the scheme. So I'll now show you a video clip of Peter and Marlo within our dispute management division. And Marlo talks about why she employed an actuary into really a very non-actuarial role in her team.
Marlo Barrywell, who's our general counsel here at WorkSafe, and Peter McNally, I'm the director of the dispute management division, but an actuary by background and training. Briefly, I'm the actuary, she's the lawyer.
My main rationale for putting a non-lawyer or an actuary in charge of a group of lawyers and a whole legal process was that I wanted us to move away from talking about the individual cases and driving strategy off responses to individual cases and being really able to understand the data and trends that we had in that system and driving strategy off a far more objective evidence base.
And we were seeing growth well in excess of inflation in average costs here in Victoria. So we spent a lot of time working with the market on developing a fixed model, fairly simple in terms of structure, but actually sitting down with individual planning firms and showing what their trends and what their experience looked like and how that was relative to the scheme.
Probably been a great exercise also in communication with those firms and really managing to drive particular behaviours by getting them to understand how their behaviours can impact on our liabilities.
At the end of the day, yeah, no one's going to sign up to something they don't like as such. That process did give a level of engagement that, you know, the angst, I guess if you use that word, that comes with a change like that just didn't come through, because people understood the basis for the change, the need for the change,
and the impact on them.
That's right. The type of information you're providing, ultimately, it isn't detailed. It's not we're not doing PPACs and all that sort of stuff in front of the lawyers. It's pretty high level sort of stats and information. But I guess what you're doing is you're using the charts and diagrams. I think the challenge in any of that, one is being patient, but two is keeping it simple.
I think the thing that I find really interesting at WorkSafe, we're an organisation of, there's a lot of technocrats here. There's lawyers, accountants, actuaries, engineers and ergonomists in the health and safety side of the business, that sort of thing. And we all speak different technical languages but often use the same words. And I'll never forget very early on when Pete and I were working on something together and we were using the term retrospective, which means one thing for a lawyer but a very different thing for an actuary. And it was only at about a minute to midnight that we realised we were actually talking about different things. And so learning the different technical languages and how to convey stuff in very simple terms, I mean, it's been useful for me as a lawyer, but I think Pete's sort of got more accustomed to the idea that you have to check in with what technical language you're using.
As an actuary, I've always, I guess, been throughout my career less inclined to be a traditional actuary. What's always interested me is dealing with different professions, different people, different aspects. From an actuarial point of view, I think what strengths it really brings to you is a whole different understanding of the operational aspects and the different perspectives that people have within the scheme and the different drivers that they may have.
So far we've talked about some of the traditional strengths that an actuary has that they can bring to an organisation like WorkSafe. But as Frank Mitchell Reddington famously said, an actuary who is only an actuary is not an actuary. So we thought it'd be interesting to have a look at what distinguishes a technical expert from someone who's able to add value beyond just their technical expertise. The first point is that it's been talked about throughout the last day and a bit, that for a scheme like WorkSafe, it's not all about numbers. So we do have strong financial objectives, making sure that we remain financially viable. But we obviously have even more important, I would say, social objectives, making sure that people come home safe from work and that if they are unfortunately injured at work, that they are helped to return to work and return to life. The next point is that I think as training, as an actuary, we're very comfortable with being able to identify and measure trends and experience and potentially problems within that experience. But we're not always so comfortable or able to then help develop solutions for the business and then take it one step further, working out a way to actually implement those solutions. And in that way, when we have those extra skills, we can help to maximise the value from the limited resources that are available. There's also a need for decisiveness. You can analyse the data all day and get quite lost in it, to be honest, but you do need to be able to pull yourself back up to the top and often use your gut feel to come up with a really firm decision that you can take to the business. And as the Actuaries Institute has recently embarked on the marketing campaign, talking about exactly the same thing, that as actuaries we can add value in being able to take uncertainty and turn it into a black and white business decision. You also need to be able to incorporate qualitative information. So it's one thing to understand what the numbers are telling you, but you also need to be able to speak to people within the business who have subject matter expertise, get an understanding of what's happening within the marketplace and even within the broader economy, and integrate all of that information back into the numerical analysis. You do have to be careful working at WorkSafe. I find it's very easy to become a victim of infinite curiosity. That's one of Len's terms. And we're asked daily to analyse probably 2, 3, 4 new things. It's really important to make a decision right up front what analysis is actually going to add value and what might be really interesting but probably has limited value. And then once you've done your analysis, and it might be perfect analysis, you might have come up with a solution and you're all ready to try to implement it, but if you don't have buy-in for that solution, you're not able to influence and engage your audience, then that analysis and your potential solution probably won't get very far. So I think I find working at WorkSafe and having daily contact with people throughout the organisation, you get that chance to develop relationships with people, which then can help to influence and engage when you need to. And as Marlo touched on in the last video clip, it's really important to speak plain English, particularly in a place like WorkSafe, with a lot of technocrats, all with different backgrounds and all with their own technical languages. So I've got one last video clip to show you, which is Nikki with Michelle from her division talking about ways that we can add value beyond technical expertise.
So Nikki, you've been working with us for almost 2 years now, or just on 2 years, and you look after really performance and analysis for my division, and we look at treatment, costs of treatment across all the various treatment types for Workers' Comp in Victoria.
I see my role very much as liaising between the subject matter experts and our analytical people who extract the data, and then at the end of it, helping them set up monitoring so that they have a way of evaluating whether the project's been successful or not. It helps to be immersed in the division because you get that context, and having daily contact with people who have backgrounds in that, you do sort of absorb the soft information, if you like, that can help you make a call about whether it's going to have a significant financial impact or not.
To me, one of the real strengths in having you as an actuary in that role is that you immediately understand, you innately understand, without, I suspect, even having to think about it, how to structure a project, measure a project, and build a project so that it has that aim as part of it from the beginning. It's not tacked on at the end, it's not let's manage this issue with pharmacy in the tail, and then oops, we forgot to do it in a way that might actually make some difference to how the actuaries might look at the liabilities.
Coming from a consulting background, you have that trusted advisor and you're a real level of respect for your advice, so I don't have that coming in. I had to earn my stripes, I think, particularly with some of the stakeholders, and try to really appreciate their perspective and really concentrate on my communication to make sure that I wasn't speaking at too high level or too complex numerically. So that's been an interesting challenge. A lot of my career has been in a more traditional role as an actuary. What I've really enjoyed about this role is that mix of people and working much more exposure to people with different professional backgrounds. They have different perspectives on things. So it's really opened my eyes to a lot of different ways of thinking, different ways of interpreting things. So I found that really interesting.
So based on our research for this paper, Nikki and I came up with our own list of some of the attributes that we think are important to become a successful actuary. These include both the technical skills, but also a lot of the soft skills that I think are really important. We just want to flag that this isn't new thinking by any means. There have been a number of people, including Diana Alert, Donna Walker, Andrew Brown, John Shepherd, the Actuaries Institute themselves through the Capabilities Framework, that have all given thought about these soft skills that are really important if you want to be a successful and value-adding actuary. We particularly like a quote by Nicolette Rubenstein in a recent article that she said, "The best actuaries are the ones that, through their engaging personalities and communication skills, are able to take the brilliance from their spreadsheets and share it with the wider audience." So I'll now pass to Nikki to have a look at why we don't necessarily have all these soft skills as actuaries and how we might be able to develop them in future actuaries.
So we have come up with a list of attributes that we thought were important and then thought, well, why don't all actuaries have these? Actuaries have been the brunt of many actuarial jokes and we're often stereotyped as being logical, analytical, long-term thinkers. We were interested to see that both Leonie Tickle's research was consistent with that when she was looking at the typical actuary personality, but also many of the participants in David Miller's Be an Influential Actuarial Tour, when they were self-assessing themselves, tended to be this stereotype. But that doesn't mean that all actuaries match that stereotype, nor that if you are born with those traits that you can't develop skills in other areas. But it does mean that we need to self-assess and look where we are lacking and develop the skills in those areas. Here we've just got a few verbs that are quite typical in our actuarial syllabus. They're called low-level verbs, estimate, define, solve, as opposed to high-level verbs such as advise, compare, and negotiate. Our actuarial syllabus gives little opportunity for students to develop non-technical capabilities. It's little opportunity for students to practice communicating, influencing, engaging. We do note, though, that the Institute is currently mapping the capability framework to our educational syllabus, so hopefully there'll be some opportunities that come out of that. It's sort of a chicken and egg scenario when we're thinking about our community expectations. We're not sure if we've created the nerdy actuary perception within the community by focusing on our technical expertise, or whether the community has developed that view of us through our technical excellence and driven us more into that area. We're not sure which came first. We think it's perhaps a bit of both. The workplaces that we work in, we felt also was a big influence on the type of experiences that we have. On the left, we have large corporations. That gives in-house actuaries exposure to different people and to see how the business operates, giving students the opportunity to understand the importance of qualitative information and also understand how to operationalise a project. On the other side, we've got the large consulting firms. They are very focused and invest a lot in skill development, particularly communicating, influencing, and engaging. We think it's important for actuaries to have a balance of both, and in both of these environments, the importance of having a mentor or a coach. So we had thought about there's a range of skill sets that we need that we don't necessarily have the opportunity or the natural skills, and thought, well, how do we go about developing these? And we thought an obvious first step was to look at what the profession has already done. So the Actuaries for the Future project have developed the capability framework and last year launched the assessment tool. It's also been earmarked that the framework will be mapped to the educational syllabus and be used to align CPD activities to skill gaps. And we were just interested, for the actuaries that are in the room, could perhaps have a show of hands, who has filled out the assessment tool? Not very many. The Institute thought it was about 10%, so perhaps a little less. Yeah. The Education Strategy Working Group is another body within the Institute. They've considered how the profession, through our education process, can build skills soft skills as a more integrated part of the student's learning, while still ensuring they learn the strong technical skills. And they're looking at this particularly at the pre-qualification stage. The Institute's been working with our advertising company to reposition actuaries as thought consultants. We have a new logo and they've got proposed a couple of new taglines. There's been a number of new areas that have gained traction within the profession and the Institute has been giving them greater recognition. The CIRA qualification for risk management professionals is one example of this. The mentoring program was launched earlier this year. Over the last few years, we've had a number of CPD national tours that have focused more on this soft skill development, and the one that we had earlier this year, Leadership Through Personal Courage, was one example of this. Our professional standard that has just recently been revised now specifically references some of these soft skills, communication, negotiation, people management, as areas that we need to be continually developing. We then thought it would be interesting to look at other professions and see what we might be able to learn from them. It was obvious that most of them have developed capability frameworks and competency standards, but one profession that stood out was the medical profession. and they've been a bit more progressive in this area, and they have at the entrance stage, as students are being accepted into their course, something called the multiple mini interviews that specifically test soft skills. So they look for cultural sensitivity, maturity, collaboration, reliability and communication skills. So whilst the actuarial profession may not be quite ready for personality tests, it is interesting that other professions are giving some weight to this. They also have much closer alignment of their soft and technical skills in their actual courses and their attributes that they put forward as what the students need to learn. So, for example, in their self attribute, the students are expected to demonstrate understanding, empathy and uncertainty. So the Institute has already taken on a number of initiatives, and Amanda and I then gave some thought to, well, what else can we do? So the capability framework and mapping that to the educational syllabus gives a number of opportunities. One that the Institute has already earmarked is where does it map to, and really emphasising those linkages. But equally important, where doesn't it map to? And what are we? How are we going to ensure the development of those areas that it doesn't map to? I guess that poses the question, is there opportunity then to reassess our service delivery and our the way that we assess the assessment formats that we use? Can we incorporate more group work and opportunities for collaborative negotiation? Another consideration is, for areas that don't fit neatly into our syllabus and our education process, do we need to have sort of more formal soft skill training, throwing up the idea of Myers-Briggs type courses? Tickle and Gale's research purports that the profession could benefit from having a greater diversity of personalities. When we talk to our senior leadership team at WorkSafe, they also stress the value of having a range of personalities on a team and the value that that brought. The Institute rebranding is a good first step in that way, but the very technical nature of our educational syllabus, Amanda and I thought, might be a bit of a deterrent for attracting a greater diversity of personalities. So we need to give consideration to how we're going to make it more attractive to get those people into our profession. Again, talking to our colleagues at WorkSafe, it was obvious that opportunities within the workplace was very important to develop some of those soft skills. So we then thought, well, how do we get students and ensure that they take up those opportunities? Maybe having a compulsory to have as a coach and mentor might be one option. We thought the value of having that is that coach and mentor can help students identify where their gaps are and work out how they're going to develop them. The mentor can also help students stress the need to have a range of experiences, working in different organisations, working on different projects, making sure you get exposure to different people. And also to seek out opportunities where you can have soft skill development. Then within our professional standard, CPD, and our practical experience requirement, we thought there was opportunity there for greater emphasis on our soft skills. So it's great that we have now at least reference in our CPD professional standard to these soft skills, but we could give it more emphasis perhaps by having a minimum number of hours that people have to show that they've worked on those skills. A lot of the soft skills that we are developed on-the-job training or through coaching or mentoring, and it seemed to be a natural fit that it be a part of the practical experience requirement. The capability assessment tool is quite a subjective tool, and it could possibly be quite tricky for students to work out what they don't know. It's a bit of a case of you don't know what you don't know. So having a mentor or a coach helping students identify where there's how to interpret the assessment tool and then what to do about it. And also having some readily available statistics that could be summarised from the participants or people who complete the assessment tool, whether it's across different practice areas or whether it's people with different skill levels of experience. Then when we looked at our website, we thought it was important that all our communication and all our messaging needs to be consistent and aligned. If we looked at one area on the website, where there's actuaries explaining what they do, and it was a really good promotion of that thought consultant image. However, when we looked on another part of our website where it explains what an actuary does, it still reads very technical. And we need to get everything together and to align and be consistent. So finally, what does it all mean? As a profession, we've identified the problem. We want to shift our image of being a stereotyped technical expert and be thought more of as thought consultants. And the Institute's taken on a few initiatives in that area. But some of the skills that appear to be very valuable in achieving that thought consultant goal maybe not necessarily natural for actuaries, and our educational syllabus falls short in helping us develop them. So there's more that we need to do can do in this area to achieve our goal. So that's the end of our presentation. We hope it's given you some food for thought.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Amanda. Folks, we got just a bit under 10 minutes, so time for many diverse and creative and thought-provoking questions, I'm sure. And once again, as per all the other sessions, if you could please identify yourselves, your organisation, and speak clearly into the microphone that's in the centre of the room, or I'm happy to come around with this mic as well. Thanks, Nick.
Hi, Nick Alsop from Allianz. I have a number of non-actuarial roles in my team as well, and I struggle with the concept, I guess, of appointing actuaries into them, both from recruiting the right level of talent and also retaining them in a role that's not traditionally actuarial. So I'd be very interested to hear how WorkSafe's gone about getting those people into the non-actuarial roles and what support's offered to retain them in those roles so they don't just turn around straight away and try and find the actuarial role that'll progress their more traditional career path.
I think in the case of a couple of people, Nikki and Peter, they actually started within the actuarial team at WorkSafe and then saw the opportunity to take on a role outside of that team, which is a nice safe way to do it, because then I think they were sort of told that they could try that out, and if it wasn't what they wanted, there's possibly room to come back to the actuarial team. That was definitely one approach that I think was useful.
Yeah. I think also, particularly through Len's view, that we are given that licence to be involved in different aspects of the business and considered valuable, so we don't feel like we're sort of poking in our nose in where we're not wanted, I guess. I've found it very, very rewarding being in a non-traditional role. It's gives you a lot more exposure to a lot of different subject matter experts. I mean, Amanda still gets that in the actuarial department, but probably it's more so in the role that I'm in.
Deb Jones, Bretton Watson. Amanda, you've been part of this process of WorkSafe, I guess, internalising actuarial advice and integrating it with their operations as broadly as possible from the beginning. How long did it take, do you think, to get to a point where you're daily getting people from all over the business asking you for pieces of analysis, and what were the drivers of that process?
I've got a very short answer for you. It took a long time, and one of the big drivers was Len.
Hi, Bruce Watson from Comcare. My question is very similar, and thanks for the presentation. It was really good. Really enjoyed it. It's sort of a similar question. So even today, if you still have to have that conversation, you know, on the actuary, I'm here to help you. What's the killer sentence? How do you get your foot in the door? How do you get somebody's time? What is it? What do you actually say that says, "Oh yes, I think I would like to talk to you"?
Yeah, I think that's been a hard one. I know when I started at WorkSafe, no one would come to me for advice because no one knew what I did. No one understood what I could actually help them with. And that still happens sometimes. I still have someone come to me and say, I'm doing this project, I'm putting it together, and so-and-so said I had to come and talk to you, but I don't really know what I have to talk to you about. But I think over time what's helped is just developing relationships throughout the business so that people know where you are and who you are and what you can actually do. So I don't know if there's an easy answer in being able to do that quickly, but I think over time it's become better and better. And now we're at the point where just about everything that would have a financial impact is run through us quite naturally, and people wouldn't think not to do that anymore.
Maybe if I could just add to that, Bruce. Part of my role is working quite closely with the agents, and very much when I started in the role, I'm not sure whether when you were in the role, Amanda, whether you had a lot of contact with them, but they really didn't understand what I did and why I was there, and it was talking at a different perspective from them. And it was a learning process for me to adapt the way that I was presenting information, and then they got used to it. And I guess there's the one example of success is I've put some monitoring in front of them now, and they can now interpret the monitoring, and they tell me what the monitoring means, which is great. So they've not only taken it on board but embraced it and using it.
Fry, just touching on that monitoring, I wanted to ask, just given the reference you made to THC and the whole idea of educating about hours of care equals X million in liability, how do you balance educating the business about what are the key actuarial drivers and evaluation to potentially dangerous approaches to claims management?
What do you mean?
Well, if you translate X hours...
Yep.
If you save X hours per day of care, that might save you, you know, $5 million. How do you balance the whole idea that you're informing them that, you know, if they give less care or if they settle via lump sum, then they save money and, you know, the outcomes are good for their profitability, but it may not be the best approach for the claims?
I don't know if we were saying that it's an either or. It's just giving them more information to make that decision. So one area is it's become quite obvious with overnight care that they have somebody available all night, but they might only use an hour of that. So then it's then looking at, well, is there another alternative that we can, rather than having an attendant care there for the whole night, is there a different alternative? So that might be actually quite good for the claimant because they may not want somebody in their house all night. They might be happy to have a more of an on-call type scenario. So it's not necessarily reducing what the client's getting. Hopefully it can tick both boxes. It's just giving more information.
And I think it's also about just being aware of what the implications of your decisions are, not just from a financial point of view, understanding the social implications as well, and then having the business through its main strategies driving the need for everyone in every decision that they're making to think about balancing those outcomes. Yeah. And I think, again, it takes time. I think at WorkSafe in the 10, 11, 12 years that I've been there, we were very much focused on financial outcomes when I started, and it has been a journey to get us to constantly think about improving service as well, and it's something that we're still working on.
Unless anyone's got a burning question, we might have to call it there. We have one.
It's not a question. I couldn't help but commenting that I think you've done an injustice to Dilbert. He's not one-dimensional, he's a champ.
Can I remind everyone that to fill in the feedback form for this session, so it's available on the web app, and I believe there might be hard copy forms available outside as well. And can I ask everyone to please join me in thanking Nikki and Amanda for an excellent presentation.